February 3rd, 2023, it's the Wat for Pedro show.
Over zijn tegenwoordige groep is John Coltrane bijzonder enthousiast.
Yeah, well, they're doing beautifully, you know, and it's just a natural thing with them. They're just growing into it, and it's very spontaneous, you know. I try to only give a skeleton, a framework for a song, and from then on, it's up to them to create their own parts to it, and that way it's much better, you know.
The young Howard Phillips Lovecraft was alone on the beach. The waves of Narragansett Bay breathed in and out. The stars burned with a terrible heat. And he was alone in the darkness. Or was he? He felt something was looking down at him, gazing down upon him. Howard squinted at the dark sky and saw that the swimming, twisting stars were swirling around a central point as if doomed to go down a cosmic drain. The center of the drain was blackening and opening wider. It's like a whirlpool one could fall into. And after all, there's no up or down in space. Wasn't he, at that moment, in space? He was standing on a gigantic, whirling, wet rock spinning through the void. Every direction was up in space, really, and every direction was down. He could easily fall head first into that black-throated whirlpool. The hole in the stars gazed back at him. It was as if the dark circle within the spiraling vortices was the pupil of an eye. And what looked at him with that eye was a thing that had no definite shape. It shaped itself moment by moment with its own impulses, its chaotic grasping at the cosmos, clutching at it, searching for something to feed upon. It was form and it was chaos all at once. It was anarchic and it was a law unto itself. It was no supernatural thing. It was itself some bent, distorted creation of the cosmos, fled to its outer boundaries. It hated the more structured cosmos. Howard could feel it hating. It hated it because the structured universe threatened to encompass and absorb it. It would be absorbed by cosmic order eventually, just as the chaotic ignition within a star surrendered its energies to gravitation and the laws of physics, to the cosmic matrix that appropriated its power and lavished it upon the earth as sunlight. And sunlight generated life. Oh, what a vile thing was life, as men thought of it. So said the being who gazed at Howard. It spoke wordlessly. It spoke with a shattering thought. It wishes to convince me, Howard thought. It wishes to make me its agent in the world. And he wondered how many such agents of malignant chaos did this lawless mind scatter within the human world.
For Pedro Show, happy Friday. Started off with John Coltrane talking to Michael DeRuiter about working with his quartet, Mr. Coltrane's quartet, not Mr. DeRuiter's, on December 1st, 1962. And then we had Cloud Over Jupiter with I and the Cosmic Whirlpool. And because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, I got with me all the way from Vancouver, Washington State, people, not Canada. Not that one. And then from Wisconsin Rapids in Wisconsin, John and Jerry. Welcome aboard, man.
Thank you.
John Shirley,
thanks
Jerry
for having us.
And I guess Jerry, it's been decided Jerry's going to go first. So, Jerry, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Wow. Okay. Well, when I was 10 years old, my older brother talked my mother into buying a K bass guitar for Christmas. And I have to say that when I was 10 years old, I really wanted that hockey game that I could play on. And when I opened up Christmas morning there and I found a bass guitar instead, I was really disappointed. Man, was I disappointed. I wanted that hockey game.
You mean your earliest musical recollection was getting bummed out by giving a bass?
That's right.
You didn't have to, because a lot of cats on the show, you know, that, hey, I was riding around in my dad's car and I heard this. But yours is like getting bummed by a bass gift. That is a first. 21 years, 7 months.
Ironically.
Jerry, you are the man. Yeah, ironically. Well, fuck, not ironically, actually, John, because in the old days, bass is where you put your retarded friend, you know, it's like right field in Little League.
In some of my bands, it's still the same.
Well, Rita Rock, surely, because, I don't know, all that hierarchy shit. Anyway, Jerry, continue on. This pad you grew up in, was there any musical instruments besides when that bass arrived?
My older brother played a saxophone in the high school orchestra, band, whatever. And he had a musical background. He sang in the choir and also played clarinet. And he kind of guided me. He wanted me to be a musician like he was. And for some reason, he picked bass guitar. I have no clue why. But I still have that K bass, by the way, too.
All right.
Some 50 years later, I still have it. And
Kay made a Kenny Burrell model guitar, the big-ass headstock. Does it have a big, fancy headstock?
No, it doesn't. It's just a single pickup little slab with actually, it doesn't even say Kay on the headstock.
Okay. Well, Keith,
it was just a little cheap model.
That's all right. You know, sometimes it ain't the bones. It's the intent. Now, let's talk about you in grade school. Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No, I wasn't. I tried band in probably like around eighth grade or something like that, and I played trombone for a while. But
that's bass clef.
Yeah, but I was just too much of a rebel, and I really wanted to play guitar by that point. By the time I was like 13 years old, I was already playing in bands and stuff. So
how did you get your first guitar?
That bass was my first.
They are different. I mean, some people say four-string guitar for a bass, but me, four-string drum set.
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? And that four-string guitar. Yeah, because here's my test. I'm glad you chimed in, John, because you know a Fender 6, right, a baritone guitar. It's tuned down an octave just like a bass guitar, but it ain't got the punch because of them skinny strings.
Oh, yeah.
Chose to go. Anyway, I don't want to divert you from your storytelling. What was the first record you bought with your own money, Jerry?
Oh, with my own money. Oh, boy.
Yeah, because when you're a kid, you ain't got a lot of money. So I'm curious about what you would spend it on.
Well, my older brother, brought home, in 1967, he brought home Jimi Hendrix's first album. Later, he brought home Blind Faith. And then probably my first record that I probably bought with my own money was the first Emerson, Lake & Palmer album.
Okay. I think that's what it's called. It's eponymous, right? And then what was the first gig you saw, Jerry?
Oh, wow. Some high school band.
At high school?
Yeah, there was a high school band that played. They were older cats that got hired to do a high school dance. And I remember the drummer played a double bass drum and was just, you know, had long hair and everything and looked really cool. You know, I wanted to aspire to that, but I wanted to play bass guitar.
Okay.
Instead.
And, you know, now I'm not talking about after school graduating, but after school, like in the afternoon, basement band, garage band, bedroom band.
Oh, yeah.
You got into that.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me about that.
Me and a buddy, we always wanted to play in a band, and we would jam all the time. We would just jam. We didn't sit down and really learn songs note for note or anything like that. We didn't drive ourselves crazy trying to figure out what the artist was doing.
What about What about composition, like creating your own material?
Oh yeah, we were writing stuff, you know, little Mickey Mouse songs back then too, you know, like when I was like 13, 14, 15 years old with my neighborhood friend and we had a band that we played a couple little things for local kids,
Let me ask you, did this band have a name?
Oh man. You know, I don't really know what
that
remember? Band was
oh,
called
It don't
back
matter.
Then.
It's Watt from Pedro Show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers. So let me ask you this. This name forgotten band, do you remember the first gig?
Oh, yeah. We played it was actually a fundraiser for somebody who was running for president. And it was 1972. And
George McGovern.
Well, it wasn't him. It was
it was the other guy.
It was before the primary. So, but it was a Democratic candidate. I just don't remember his name.
Okay. It's not important. Was the gig a success? That's what's important to me.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was wild. We had about six or seven members in the band and everybody was doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Ah, so it was more than just you and your buddy. You guys had expanded?
Yeah. There were some people who just wanted to get in on the scene, you know. They wanted to be a part of it all because we were playing this gig and we said, sure, what can you play? And they said, well, I got a cowbell.
Yeah, Alabama sausage whistle.
we were playing stuff like Grand Funk and...
Oh, so you did copy songs. Because, see, in the 70s, that's all me and D-Boo. Anybody we knew, no one wrote their own songs. Everybody tried to copy stuff off records when I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
I'm 13 in 1970, so my whole teen years is the 70s.
Sure.
Yeah. So there was no culture for writing your own songs. That's why I always ask about that question, because it seemed when the movement came, like nowadays you can ask a young person, and they're writing songs right now, no problem. But, man, we didn't have that shit in the 70s. You know, arena rock was fucked up mentality.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to blame others for our shortcomings, but I'm always curious. I'm way motivated by people who start writing songs early. So glad about that gig. How long does this band last, Jerry?
It was really short-lived. But somewhere around probably when I was getting closer to, I had to be 18 because that was the bar age. So when I was 18, I was in a band called Felix, and we played a few bar gigs, I remember. And then shortly after that, I started me and my neighborhood buddy, we started a band called Zany Star Blaster, and we were all,
Better
it was
name.
All,
but
you know,
Felix,
most,
actually,
mostly
Felix.
Original.
Felix wasn't your band, right? You joined Felix, but then this
right.
The star band you actually created. That's happening.
Yep.
And how'd that turn out?
Well, we ended up touring about seven states in the Midwest over about a 2.5 year period, and we played 150 to 200 shows a year.
That's happening.
In that time.
Yeah, that's a lot of gigs.
Yep, we had an agent, a couple of agents out of the Fox Valley area here in Wisconsin, and they booked us, and we were doing week-long gigs that, you know, they sent us all over the place, North Dakota, South Dakota, everywhere in the Midwest.
Yeah, planes, yeah, big drives. Okay, look, you guys gave me the Shirley King, right, the name you guys' collab. Poison Wheel, I want to play that.
It's a poisoned wheel. A howl to a growl to a wistful mutter. Everybody slips in a tub of butter. I live inside a cat food can. The fly with me says, ain't life grand? It's a poisoned wheel. It's a poisoned wheel. Crushed under a heel. And then a poisoned wheel. A poisoned wheel. A link and a promise. And a sad little wink. It's always sooner than everyone thinks. A glare and a stare at a dusty floor. It's always less than a little more. It's a poisoned wheel. It's a poisoned wheel. Crushed under a heel. And then a poisoned wheel. A poisoned wheel. A cynical shrug. Look for a drink. The rivers turn the color pink. The city fries a cranked up oven. Live your life without enough loving. It's a poisoned wheel. It's a poisoned wheel. Crushed under a heel. And then a poisoned wheel. The whole world.
Persecution, I'll be in it. persecution are we in?
feels unreleased, taut in his neon cage. The one who whispers without words suggests another stage. The thrill of hanging, the thrill of dangling at the very edge of death. So very close, so very near, near to your final breath. He's sucked into the inky pool before the noose is loosed. Then his life just drains away. Oh, another strangled fool. The comedian decides he shouldn't take another shot. Another speedball raging, the lightning fairly caught. The whisper without words insists on just one more hit. Just one more, not so much. Oh man, you'll be so lit. And when his lungs fill up with blood, he sees the Omega sign. As the end comes with a thud, he hears the last punchline. And the gambler, he throws the dice, a half million on one toss. He knows now that he should quit, losing big's too big a cost. But then the whisper comes, a hiss right from the air, and suddenly he takes the leap and bets it all right there. He loses all, yes, everything, and drifts up to his room. Should he use the gun beside his bag? A sweep with a new broom. The wordless whisper hisses, suggests without a sound. Hisses softly in his ear. True hope cannot be found. And people in the parking lot, counting money they'll lay down, scarcely notice that final shot, that quick and lonesome sound. The whisperer needs no words to hit your life apart. He can't be seen, he's never heard, but he's with you from the start. Heed him if you must, my friend, you'll hear him in your heart. Laughing, clearly laughing, joyful in his art.
For Pedro Show, that chunk of music started with Shirley King doing Poison Wheel. Then St. Abdullah, Jason Nasri featured Nappy Napa. He's from Model Home. With Mirror of Infinity. Network Glass and Jason Krumer with Two Prerequisite. And Eye Rolls after that. Trails. Had Zoe on the show last episode. Eye Rolls. Twig Harper, after that, he moved, but he was had a warehouse in Balmar that was a happening scene, Zoe was telling me. Artificial Mass for Self-Generating Christ. Uni and the Urchins after that, with Simulator. Uni, right? That's a Japanese word for the sea urchin eggs. You get it. Anthony Pierogue with 20th Century Pierogue, great guitar man. Got a band with the rhythm section of Fugazi these days. Aesthetics. Paul Sears after that, Praise of Folly. I love that. And then finally, Fred Hodgson with John Shirley and Jerry King doing From the Jazz Comp, which is where it's from. Actually, Zag, Z-Z-A-G, people. And now, I need your story, John, your journey through music. So will you please bring your earliest musical recollection, please?
The first time it really made an impact on me was when I was a tiny kid and I heard Elvis on Ed Sullivan. And everybody was laughing at me because I was like carried away by the whole sound of it. And I was dancing around. I was just this little tot, you know. And I tried for years afterwards as a little boy. I went around singing Elvis songs, trying to do his voice. See, this piping little kid, you know, about six, trying to sing like Elvis. And then in the 60s, you know, I listened to Beatles and psychedelic stuff caught me up, and then psychedelics themselves caught me, and that really, you know, enveloped me in something, so that I became super receptive to electric rock. And but there was very little music around me in my family. Nobody played an instrument. The only live music I heard was in church a little bit. So but I always had a yearn to be in a band since I was about 7 years old.
Beautiful. And, but John, the question was your first musical recollection. But you could tell me all that other stuff, too.
That was experience playing in a band?
No.
Is that what you mean?
No, just anything musical, but it's first thing, right?
The first thing was that Elvis.
Yeah, I understand.
It was like blew my mind, my little mind.
No, I understand that, and I could see how it'd be instrumental in forming your attitudes towards music. Is beautiful. It actually was an organic, natural response, and I think it's beautiful. What about at school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No.
Okay. I asked that question.
I was so alienated.
I asked that question because a lot of schools got rid of their music and arts programs.
That's true.
Flea started the Silver Lake Music Conservatory of Music, because he went back where he learned trumpet and found out they got rid of the program. So that's why I asked that question. Let me ask you this, what I asked Jerry. What was the first record you bought with your own money? Was it Elvis Presley?
No, I think it was, we had Elvis Presley, my sister had all those. I think it was an album by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, which I wanted because there was a girl who was naked except for whipped cream on the cover.
Yeah, everybody knows that one.
And okay. So suddenly I liked Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, so I could have that picture, because I was like 11 and it was fun.
You know, there's a story behind the
stimulating.
There's a story behind the hit song on there. Hal Blaine talks about they don't know how to count in the song right, so he uses the fucking kick drum. Boom, 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 ba da da. Yeah, because the guys couldn't get the fucking kick up. They couldn't get the pick up, not kick up, fucking what. And what about the first gig you saw, John?
First gig was Dave Clark Five, which toured from my little
drummer
town.
Drummer man.
My sister was required by my parents to take me to see it, and I thought they were great. They were a good band.
But they were trippy, right?
But
for those
time,
days,
that was like transformative to see this happen in person, right there on the stage in front of me, and at the Salem Armory Auditorium.
Okay, now. Having a drummer lead a band was very different, too, in those days.
Yes. Right. Yeah, and he was at the center of it. And that brings – and it kind of focuses you on the, on the beat and on the percussive part. But they also did harmonies, you know, and they had these cunningly put-together songs, and they just owned the stage.
Yeah.
They were real pros. And I was very impressed, boy.
I'm really impressed.
And not long –
I'm really bummed out on how drummers are treated, and they got, you know, by doing that, they kind of, you know, he's a musician just like anybody else, you know. Big mistake Minutemen made was having George Hurley in the back. You know, last 20 years I've had all my drummers front of stage, because it's basically rhythm music. Why be in denial, I'm thinking. So I want to ask you what I asked Jerry. Not after school graduate, but in the afternoon. Did you get into the basement band, bedroom band, garage band thing?
Not in high school. Not until soon after high school I started doing that with punk rock bands.
And how'd it happen?
Me and my friends were part of a weird alternative street scene, and it was kind of a spin-off from glam, and all these girls were dressed like girls who would hang out at glam things, you know, and everybody's hero was Bowie, and
that's exactly where our punk scene in Hollywood came from. It was mainly girls from glitter and glam, yeah.
Right.
In fact, me and V Boom's first gig we saw was T-Rex.
Oh, well, there you go. Great performance.
1973, we were 14 years old. But our punk, not before hardcore, 70s punk, it came from exactly what you're talking about, John.
Yeah, and there was a street scene of people hanging around in the street because we didn't have any place else to go. And then somebody came and said, there's this little record shop that has imported records, and there's this thing called the Sex Pistols they're playing in the shop. You have to hear this. And we went over there and listened to it, and it was very transformative for us. I had heard the Ramones, which also made a big impression on me, but the Sex Pistols really blew me away. And the first thing they were playing was that I heard that really affected me was No Fun, their cover of Iggy's No Fun.
It ain't Iggy, and, it's Stooges. Ig would tell you
You know that song.
You know what I'm saying?
You played on
Yeah, but John, I got to tell you, Ig would say Stooges. He wouldn't say Iggy.
Okay. All right, it was. Yeah. It was the Stooges, yeah.
Big difference. The Passenger is Iggy, but No Fun is Stooges.
That's true. Very true.
I don't mean to correct you, though. I don't mean to correct you. Now, when you guys started your band, what instrument you end up getting on?
I couldn't play anything except my vocal cords.
That's an instrument. That's an instrument.
Yeah, it became, and eventually I learned to sing.
Three times.
At first, I was just kind of young.
Three times I saw Ima Sumac, and it's definitely an instrument. That lady had like 12 octaves going. She blew out, one gig, she blew out the fucking PA. Nipples like thumbs. You know, this lady was intense. I don't know if you... Her husband wrote all the music, you know, this exotic princess kind of trip. But, man, could she sing.
I've heard that, and it is powerful.
Yeah, so this idea that the voice is just a voice, it's just as much an instrument as the bass or the drums, or even guitar, in my book.
It's kind of a wind instrument, you know. It's like a clarinet, because there's this column of vibrating air in your throat.
Absolutely.
You have to operate it like a clarinet player operates a column of vibrating air.
That's right. And then, if you're even using words, you're working on another level of expression.
Right.
We're going to have to save it because we're at the end of the first hour of February 3rd, 2023 edition Wild Pedro Show. Special guests, John and Jerry from, Shirley King. Hold tight for hour two. February 3rd, 2023. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Machen spoke the hidden thing. His pale hands divide the lobes of my brain. I paid 100 in gold to be an hour insane. And for pleasure like a red, red symphony. All the while it makes a jest of me. And the sage remembers the hidden thing when Machen said, as though he's dead, true evil is a rose that sings. True evil is a rose that sings. My flesh howls with microscopic lips. My nerves vibrate in cellular crypts, singing, evil is a rose that sings. True evil is a rose that sings. No matter how bright falls the light across icy stone walls, no matter how warm the fire burns, still I feel it all. I feel the uncast shadow fall. Feel the uncast shadow fall. And all is seen through a fog that rises from invisible seas. And the tempter comes an hour past midnight, comes with hands stretched out to me, singing, true evil is a rose that sings. True evil is a rose that sings. He's glib, he's charming, like a travel agent for Babylon. His fingers are long and cool and white, and very strong, and very strong, and very strong, and very strong. For true evil is a rose that sings. Machen spoke of the hidden thing. True evil is a rose that sings. True evil is a rose that sings.
His fingers are long and cool and white. And very strong, and very strong, and very strong, and very strong. For true evil is a rose that sings. Machen spoke of the hidden thing. True evil is a rose that sings. True evil is a rose that sings.
Well, I think I'll consult my professional guide to songs. Here's one from 1945.
Thank you. Thank you. on down. When you drop your gown, no longer frown, cause you're no longer bound. Your spirit sounding, leaving and bounding, you feel it rounding the corner. Your former dormer is now unfolding, the golden share is now rolling, rolling and tolling, doling and holy.
Ain't that a way I'm passing?
Watch for Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with Shirley King doing Evil as a Rose and Sings. Tom Verlaine after that. We just lost him last week. This is him in the solo stuff. Blues Eyes Crying in the Rain, live at Slim's. June 19, 1990, Slim's up in the city. 11th Street, I think. Dave Newhouse after that with Pluck Wind Bag. That's a great title. Pluck Wind Bag, yeah. Jerry and Michelle King. This is from the Zash Cop. Avalo for Derek. And then Ron Anderson, Strangulation. I've had Ron Anderson on the show. Great cat. And I got to collab with him, too, with Al Margolis, Chester, New York. Amy Denio after that, Untrapped. This is from the Zash comp. Shirley King, Pig Zipper. So, let me ask you about the first gig, because we are out of time there, John. First gig you did with your guys. What was the band called, and what was it like?
It was called Terror Wrist, wrist as in like on your arm, and thought we were being cute. Terror Wrist, and it was we had decided to create a little punk rock club in Portland, Oregon for ourselves, and we didn't have any other way to hear it, so we made up our own club, and we just rented a hall from some bikers, actually, they had their club. And they had a little stage, and for like $40 we could have the place for the night. And it even had a PA system. So we called it the Revenge Club, and we made up a little posters, photocopied posters that we put up, and kids came, you know, teenagers and young adults, my band played about 7 songs of, you know, including I Want to Be Your Dog, and but mostly we did originals and all of, the only one I remember the title of was Our Love Is Like a Death Camp.
now I'm guessing, John, I'm guessing, but this is before the Satyricon.
It was way before the Satyricon. It was the first punk club in Portland.
Because I remember when the Minutemen first came up and played Portland, that was the only club going. A guy named George ran the place. Yeah.
Right, I remember. And it was I heard the Minutemen in Portland. I must have been there.
You know who was there that really impressed us? Greg Sage of the Wipers.
Right. He recorded me and my later band, Sado Nation.
I remember Sado Nation. I remember you guys. Okay. I remember a 4-song 7-inch, right?
Remember what? Yes, that album of compilation. And yes, and that's, he recorded that.
Wow.
He was in our scene. Yeah. We played in the same gigs with him.
He's been living in Arizona for a lot of years now, but I know he was early on in Portland. That was a great record. Is this real? We conked at Mike King, the guy who painted that cover. That's when it dawned on me. Hey,
right. Mike King was in my first band. He was the bass player.
He was Snake Pit. Or something like that. Or Cows from Hell or something. He had a couple
of
things.
Hell Cows. The Hell Cows.
But this is when I figured out that cover was actually windshield wipers. I didn't understand. It was because it looked like some Mondrian, but it was beautiful and stuff. Here, I want to play more Shirley King, Puppet Dance.
Dance. It's going on right over there. Well, ain't money, with them strings tied up in there. They're dancing, dancing, dancing a jig. And you can do the dance too. Just pay all of your money. It's the very first rule. As the puppeteers leer and tug those pretty strings. Hey, hey, my little man, everybody will dance and sing. And hey there, my little lady, do the puppet dance. It don't matter if it's a little shady, you'll soon understand. Sister lady, just step on the stage. Don't you fret as they tie the strings. It's the easiest thing. We all just play along. Yes, just play along. And you play along too, saxophone. Yeah.
Panita Panau, Panita Panau, Panita Panau. pulling us down. Pulling us both down to the center of the earth. But there's a way. There's a way. There's a great weight pulling on me. Yes, upon you and me both. Down to this old world. The darkness keeps us close. Astronauts fly as high as they can. Radiation cuts their earthly bones. Their instruments cannot understand why they can't reach the higher tones. You and me, we have a way. You and me will find a way to escape this world, my dear. The soul thinks itself free as it sucks through the vacuum of space. Then it's drawn to the hungry moon and realizes its fate. Only those who've made a mighty soul, vibrating 1,000 times a second, will escape the pull of the hungry moon, will be welcomed to the solar level, where the subtle beings danced to the music of the sun. light of the sun.
Watch for Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music off with Shirley King doing Puppet Dance. Then Mole Omen out of Baltimore with Here. Orthodox out of Seville, Spain. Embedro. Medicine Singers. Sanctuary. Ray Shin with Tower. Conveyor. Windswept Lot. And then finally Shirley King with Gravity Well. Okay. How did you meet Jerry, John? Jerry, how'd you meet John?
We've never met in person.
Well, not in person, but you met somehow because you're collabing.
Well, my recollection is that after my first album was released, The Cloud Over Jupiter, Fifth Mass from the Sun, after that was released, I just sent John an email and asked him if he wanted to hear it.
But how did you know how to send it to John? How did you meet him? Or
through Facebook.
Okay. The fake look connect. All right.
Yeah.
Airbrush it up, people. Airbrush it up. But no, okay, so you just unsolicited say, hey, you want to hear this?
Yeah, and he said sure. So I sent him a copy in the mail.
Okay.
And then after he got it, you know, we exchanged a couple emails back and forth, and I had a song in mind for him because I had heard his voice, and I had a song in mind, and that song ended up being a song off the Spaceship Landing in the Cemetery album. It's called Tippy Top.
Oh, Tippy Top, that's right.
Yep, and I wrote the words for it, but. You know, I asked him to sing it,
So let me get this straight, Jerry. You knew of John, but John didn't know of you?
Right. Well, who am I?
I'm not trying to make, like, some kind of competition or anything, but I'm just trying to figure it out in my mind, because I wasn't there.
No, I was basically unknown. John didn't know anything about me, and I was just really getting started with this whole recording thing. I had played in cover bands up until like around 2010, and I just finally said I had enough of it. And I went out and I bought some recording gear, and I decided I was going to start writing my own stuff.
I love it.
And I just got fed up with cover bands.
Yeah.
And so, and was beating my head against the wall, you know, basically. So, anyway, I bought my recording gear, and I recorded a song that I had written, and I sent it around to my friends and stuff, and they said, "Wow, this is really good. You know, you should do some more." You know. So I wrote another tune, and that song ended up being on the first Cloud Over Jupiter album. It was called That Red Guitar. And, well, the way it went was I had a dream, and I dreamt that Jimi Hendrix came back to Earth, but he was only here for one day. And I asked him what he was going to do, and he says, "I just want to play guitar." And so I gave him my red Stratocaster, and he jammed on it all day. And the sun started going down, and he said, "I got to go back now. I'm going to have to leave." And that was, you know, then I woke up, and that was my dream. And I was so inspired by that, I wrote these words down right away and wrote the lyrics for the song. And the song became That Red Guitar. And so I recorded all the music for it and everything, and I just had a drum machine on it. And I was moseying around on Facebook looking at people and all this kind of stuff, and I came across this guy, Pete Thompson. Pete Thompson was the drummer for Robin Trower in the 80s. And I thought, what the hell? So I sent him a friend request, and he responded back and accepted me as a friend, and I thought, well, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So I sent him my song, That Red Guitar, and I said, give a listen whenever you can, you know, let me know what you think about it. And he wrote back right away, and he said, yeah, I'm pretty busy. I'll listen to it in a couple weeks or so, and I'll get back to you. Well, it was 10 minutes later, he wrote back, and he said, holy shit, this is really good. He said, you want me to drum on it? I know that you have a drum machine on there, he said. He says, so would you like to have some real drums on there? And I said, yeah. And next thing you know, he recorded drums for that song.
You know, that's beautiful. I love when a music cat does that for another music cat. You know, it's just, there's no righteous, beautiful thing you can do, you know, instead of trying to like con somebody or something, just to put out your expression to go with their expression. That's beautiful.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that was that. And, you know, then I just started recording more and more songs, and I ended up having an album's worth of material. And bit the bullet and spent the money and had the CD made. And then I just started throwing it around and asking people if they wanted to hear it. And just really giving them away for nothing was what it amounted to, a lot of them.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to have to stop you there, Jerry, because we're at the end of the second hour, February 3rd, 2023 edition, Juan Pedro Show. Special guests, John and Jerry. Hold tight for hour three. February 3rd, 2023, it's the third hour of the Juan Pedro Show.
Becoming demonic machines.
are becoming demonic machines, demons who eat their way through the biospheric skin of the earth, demons who swarm like locusts, disboiling the paradise of our birth. We form the demons inside, imprint by imprint, and etching at a time, day by angry, fearful day, decisions coated in grime. We are becoming demonic machines.
Show. Started that chunk, well, started the third hour off with Shirley King doing High. Then Tom Dill with the Blackbird Bossa. He's been on the show. He's an incredible music cat. A lot of trumpet, right? Electronics. Trippy stuff. Elliot Sharp after that with Bale de Sombras. Ginza Streetlights at Suco Camara. Crane with Ever Being There. Cloud Over Jupiter. That's what you were talking about, Jerry. Demonic Machines. Okay, so I wanted to know what the difference was between Cloud Over Jupiter and Shirley King. So Cloud Over Jupiter was way before Shirley King. I'm sorry.
Right.
Okay, so it was kind of a man alone, and then you asked people to come aboard for Cloud Over Jupiter. But what about Shirley King? How does that happen?
Well, after I had that first album done, I sent it over to John and just asked him if he wanted to hear it, and he said he really liked it. And you know, the thing about the music is that if you listen to that first album by Cloud Over Jupiter, there's a song on there called Black 43, and it's got the horror element in it. It's, you know, scary, suspenseful material. And I knew that John was a horror writer, and
I didn't know that.
Well, yeah.
Okay. That's great.
Well, how would you describe yourself, John, as far as your writing goes?
I just write in whatever genre the story wants to be. Whatever my, you know, if I have something I want to say, I think what genre would express what I want to say best. It's, okay, this one requires horror, and this one requires science fiction, and this one is just like a suspense thriller sort of thing.
Are we talking music or literature or both?
Both.
Okay.
Both, because that's what attracted me to John, and I knew that he was a legendary writer already, and that, you know, I assumed that he was more of a horror writer or suspense writer, and that's what I wanted to capture in the music that I was composing.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to catch that vibe, and so I thought he might be interested in what I had to offer, and so I sent it over to him, and he liked it, and you know, then we, through a series of emails, we decided we were going to start doing a few songs together and just see where it went. And I always wanted to have the suspense and the horror factor built into everything as much as I possibly could. And, of course, John is a master of words when it comes to that kind of stuff, and his voice is great. There's nobody else that could sing that kind of stuff, I don't think. He excels at everything that I throw at him, and it's just great. It's a good partnership.
Well, I got a couple more Clouds Over Jupiter tunes that you flowed me I want to play now.
From nowhere.
for me. Six kinds of darkness, sticky with energy. The darkness of the Arctic, 2 months into the night. The darkness of the eclipse, forgetting of all light. With its own shade. Six kinds of darkness, a path in a sunless glade. Behind your closed eyelids, where shapes form in the black. Underneath the blindfold, the blind boy's cul-de-sac.
Watt for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Started the chunk off with Cloud Over Jupiter doing In Stormland. Then Mio Clono with Retorn. Retorn. That's it. It's trippy. Mike Eckstein after that with Dusty Carpet Blues. And finally Cloud Over Jupiter with Six Kinds of Darkness. Okay, so the MO of Shirley King is, Jerry, you send the music over to John, and with John, you get a feel for it and develop a narrative with words and spiel, and then you deliver it with vocal expression.
Yeah, in Stormland, for example, I had been. You know, I'd written a novel called Stormland, and that's my most recent science fiction novel. And it was in my head still. You know, it's about a place that's permanent storms all the time, 24/7, 365 days a year. And
like the red spot on Jupiter, right?
Like the red spot on Jupiter. In fact, is an analogy I used.
Ah.
But this was in Charleston, and that's around. And there's not much left of the town. Anyway, it's about our collision with extreme weather and climate change.
Yeah.
And a kind of a metaphor about how it will affect people on the ground, you know.
We gotta reap what we sow.
So that's in the song too, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
The song is all about that.
We gotta reap what we sow.
Yes, that's
right. Yeah, karma's a bank account. We're either making deposits or withdrawals.
Yeah, I think we're overdrawn.
So to really work the metaphor, huh? Look,
yeah.
Okay, so interesting. Does it ever go back again? Like, does Jerry say, you know what, you didn't get it, or every time you hit it right on the mark, or what?
Well, I do seem to be able to hear the right places to sing in these things that he sends me, and then sometimes, you know, lyrics come to me that have been sort of some seed of them have been in the back of my mind. And then I hear the song and one of those seeds kind of bursts into, and growth there and it connects with the, I was in a lot of bands and wrote a lot of lyrics. I write lyrics for the Blue Oyster Cult too. I've written, like 25, sets of lyrics that they've recorded.
You're in company with Richard Meltzer.
Yes, it's kind of, except he had a big hit with them. That was a big difference. He was in there.
Yeah, but he had songs like She's As Beautiful As a Foot, stuff like that.
Yeah, you got to love that one.
She's, oh, I love it. I love it. Her face changing now, a Guernsey cow.
Yeah, they always kept a sense of
I think
of
they went to college together, some of them.
Yes,
that was the connect.
That's true.
Yeah, how what was your connect? How did you meet them guys?
I just through mutual friends, and I was their fan since I saw them. I happened to be in New York in like 1972, and I saw them play a free gig at Central Park, and I was blown away by it. I thought these guys stand right out.
Yeah, we liked them a lot too.
There was nobody who sounded like them, and I sought out their first album, and I've been hooked ever since.
I really like the second one, Tyranny Mutation. The first one's kind of spacey.
Yes.
It recorded kind of spacey.
And you played it.
I know both. I know both the Bouchard brothers.
Oh, me
and
too.
And I've met Eric Bloom. And stuff, and I got to play the Red and the Black once with him in Beverly Hills. Him and Buck Darman had me come up on stage.
Cool.
I didn't know how little they were.
Firepost does a great version of the Red and the Black.
Yeah, well, me and D Boom been playing that since we were 13. We owed that band a lot. We learned a lot from the BOC guys.
Right. So did Metallica, by the way.
Did they? Okay. Well, you know, I think a lot of cats, because BOC's in a weird period. They ain't the movement yet. You know, except for Stooges and Cat Beefheart. But you know what I mean? They're kind of trippy. They're kind of laying out the work for the movement in a way. You know, it's okay to be kind of strange.
Yes, they were very – yes, you could be literary. You could be poetic. You know, but also you didn't have to be pretty poetic. You didn't have to be pretty. It could be dark poetic.
Yeah, right. Well, Jim.
Speaking of
Jim Morrison, of, sometimes right, True Sailing Is Lost, Admirals and Shareholders, and all that kind. Yeah, speaking of what, Jerry?
Speaking of Blue Oyster Cult, Richie Castellano is on my first.
Okay, he's the guy. He's their main music guy.
He just recorded another song with me that's going to be on the next Cloud Over Jupiter album.
Wow.
If I can ever get it done. And,
I'm going to ask you guys, because we're almost out of time here, but it's a small world, let me say, the way all these connects are, man. Greg Sage and me and John, all right? D. Boone going through the stage there at the Satirica. I swear George looked like fucking Carlos Santana in a wife beater shirt and that curly hair.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, what are the next... Is the next plan a Shirley King proj, or is it a Cloud Over Jupiter proj for you guys both to collab on?
You know, that's right now we're just kind of concentrating the album Escape from Gravity, which you've been playing some cuts from. But
yeah.
we are talking about another album, and maybe take one that takes like a compilation from the first three we did.
Okay.
And some new cuts.
Okay. But is it going to be Cloud Over Jupiter, or is it going to be Shirley King?
What do you think, Jerry?
Shirley King.
Okay. So because kind of Cloud Over Jupiter was like, Jerry, you're kind of prog, and now you guys have dovetailed into a true collab.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think, you know, John said that, you know, bringing back a couple songs from the first couple albums, I think maybe what we'll do is we'll do some alternative mixes of them.
Great. But I'm really interested in the next phase, too. So when you guys get this album, even with the remixes and re-whatever done, will you guys both come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm there.
I can't wait. Thank you so much, both of you, for being aboard. I love what you're doing. Keep on keeping on, please. People, it's been the February 3rd, 2023 edition of Wap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.